Hey! Hello, lovely listener. Thank you for sticking us in your ear holes. I'm Ferg.
He's had too much coffee. I'm Heather.
Any gurgling noises are the newest new old friend curled up on our lap. She alternates. We don't share a lap.
We're just two heads, one lap.
Two heads, one lap. That's what they call us.
Okay, today is the 15th chapter of Crimes, Clues and Christmas, and Artridge is doing his Quasimodo impression again.
What?
He has a hunch.
Oh, come on. Lovely, lovely bit of business there, Heather. If you're not laughing at that, people, this might not be the podcast for you. Anyway, quiz?
Yeah, turn around and go home. Okay, thank you. Right. Remember to send us your answers via social media. We're trying to keep track of the scores, and there will be a special prize for the winner.
Ooh, special prize. Hashtag NofQuiz question 15. Which English monarch established the tradition of Christmas trees in England?
Let's pick up the story, shall we, with Crimes, Clues and Christmas.
Shall we ring the bell?
Ding, ding. Crimes, Clues and Christmas, Chapter 15.
Just a little hunch, Inspector. Just a little hunch. Those were the words I uttered at the end of the last chapter, which have no doubt been echoing around your brain ever since, leaving you desperate to know what clue your favourite sleuth sleuthed whilst speaking to Tatum Cakey Lyle about his cigarettes. Well, you shall just have to wait a little longer, I'm afraid. We quickly confirmed Cakey's alibi with BV and Flipper, and then launched into our next interview proper with, talking of cigarettes, Dot Clitheroe. She knocked on the door at her appointed time, and I got up from my seat and opened it. She was nowhere to be seen.
Down here,
she croaked. Ah, there she was, scurrying around at waist height like an ornery toddler who's picked up a terrible nicotine habit. She launched herself up into the seat and looked at O'Rowby.
Mind if I light up?
She asked, to which O'Rowby looked understandably confused, given as she had two lit sticks already clutched in the knuckles of her left hand. Be my guest, he replied, and she dexterously produced another and lit it with a fluid motion of her left hand.
Okay, let's get down to brass tacks, shall we? What do you need to know from me so we can get this investigation wrapped up and signed off as an accident, allowing me to reopen the house and start making money again, huh?
I'm afraid I couldn't tell you just at present, Mrs. Clitheroe.
Come on, you don't need to keep secrets from Doc. What do you need? I can help with the gossip. Rudy has been given at the horizontal pas de deux with more light Vantaya. But as far as I know, he's never convinced the money-grabbing Daisy Love to dance the libido lambada with him. Maybe his ego was bruised. Marlena hated her, naturally. And she is German, least we forget. Barrington was tying himself in knots because the poor girl couldn't handle his steps. Maybe if she spent a bit less time moaning about her feet and more on where to put her feet. But there we go. Plenty of suspects for it. But you ask me, Cakey is your man. He is obsessed with Marlena. Not that she gives him the time of day, mind. Could be he saw this as a way of grabbing her attention. You know, bump off a rival and rise up the estimations of his beloved. That sort of thing. I mean, a bag fell from the fly floor and he's the head flyman. So there you go. We can get by without Cakey. BV can cover. Arrest him and close the case so we can get back on with our work, eh?
It was quite a speech, and at its conclusion, Dot took a well-earned drag on all her cigarettes, clearly satisfied she'd put the matter to rest. O'Rowby was far from convinced, though, and I was with him. That's all very illuminating, Mrs. Clitheroe, but Mr. Lyle has a verified alibi for the time of the incident.
Does he? Barrington, then?
Likewise, he was stood not a few feet from Daisy at the point of impact.
Oh, I don't know. It must have been an accident, I suppose. Can't you just put accident and let us open? Tomorrow is a matinee day. Two shows. Two full houses we'll have to refund if you carry on with this malarkey.
This is not malarkey, Mrs. Clitheroe. It is an investigation into a suspicious death. Possibly a murder. At this point, I chipped in with my two penneth, not liking to be a silent partner in any situation for too long. What about Rawlins?
What about Rawlins?
You've given motives for almost everyone else. Why not Rawlins?
I've not given you motive for Father Christmas either, Mr. Artridge. And he's about as likely as a culprit as Eldridge. Why would Eldridge want to harm Daisy?
I think that's exactly what Mr. Artridge is asking.
Well, he wouldn't, would he? With Daisy hurt.
Killed.
With Daisy killed and the theatre shut. He'll be losing money on his investment, won't he?
Money isn't always everything.
That is only true for those in the middle, Inspector. If you ain't got none, let me tell you, it's bloody everything. And for those that have pots of it, they get obsessed with wanting more pots, bigger pots, nicer pots, better pots than your friends and family. To a certain kind of person, money is everything. Money and power. Going back to why Eldridge couldn't have done anything about it, he was down in the auditorium, same as Barrington.
What about you?
I was there too. I popped my head in to take a look at how rehearsals was going.
Here, she blushed a little and flashed a warning look at me.
You know, to check they weren't suddenly gonna need 50 new costumes or something. And then, when I saw Rawlins, I went over to keep him company. Weren't there more than 5 minutes before the bag fell?
Speaking of costumes, what about Charlotte McConstance?
Oh, I thought we'd covered Chaz's involvement, Inspector, I interrupted.
I was asking Mrs. Clitheroe, Mr. Artridge, he said with a tone to his voice that let me know I, like the kids out skating on the Thames, was on thin ice. Of course. Sorry. Mrs. Clitheroe?
Can't rightly see how Chaz would benefit from it, to be honest.
What about the money she'd get paid for creating new costumes? It's quite a tidy fee, all things considered, isn't it?
I suppose it is. But she's the best at what she does. She earns it. But bumping off Daisy wouldn't mean we'd get new costumes, necessarily. Chances are we'd get back to Marlena, who we already have costumes for. I don't know if you've noticed, but ballet dancers don't exactly come in all shapes and sizes. They pretty much go straight up and down. If it weren't for their faces half the time, I wouldn't know which was front and which was back. It's only because Daisy is that much shorter than Marlena we got new ones made this time. Whoever goes next will likely fit one of the two sets.
I see. And what about you?
Nope, I'd not get into them. But then I never mastered point work, so I'm not going to be asked to step in, am I?
I had a sudden image of Dot in a leotard and a tutu performing the Dance of the Sugarplum Fairy. To see what I saw in my imagination, I invite you to envisage one of those novelty dolls one sees in coastal B&Bs for hiding the toilet paper, affixed to a large spring like a jack-in-the-box, bouncing all over the stage. I guffawed.
Something funny,
snapped Dot. No, not at all. I just had something in my throat. Excuse my assistant, interjected O'Ralby. I was actually asking whether you'd care to ascribe a motive to yourself, as you've been so forthcoming in providing one for others.
Oh, I see. Okay, well, fair's fair. I didn't like the fact she was always going on about how she was getting paid less than Marlena got paid. I mean, she's Daisy Love and Marlena is Marlena Schweinvolger. Don't ask me to spell it. I don't speak German. It's got those dot things floating somewhere. But if you're really looking for something, I suppose that would be it.
Thank you for your honesty, Mrs. Clitheroe. That'll be all.
Can we open the theatre for tomorrow's show, then?
Said Dot as she got up, actually down, to leave. It's still a bit early to say, but I'd say it probably is unlikely.
Unlikely? Bloody unlikely, he says. Why can't we just open? Who is it hurting?
She chuntered away to herself as she left. The next person for us to speak with was Rudy Lightfoot, fully in persona, lisp and all.
I don't know what to say, Inspector.
Well, whatever you say, can I ask you to say it more softly? I'm getting soaked.
Soaked? Oh, I see. Sorry. You see, I spent some time in Spain.
Yes, Mr. Artridge filled me in on your background. All of it.
Artridge, I thought we were boys,
whined Rudy.
I'm sorry, Rudy, but with what happened to Daisy, I needed to share everything I knew.
Fine. Well, what do you want to know then? I'm really interested in the conversation you and Mr. Artridge were having before you were interrupted by Chaz McConstance.
What conversation? I don't remember.
But the way Rudy was shifting in his seat like his underwear was slowly heating up gave him away.
I think you do, Mr. Lightfoot. The conversation about someone involved in the ballet who was bleeding you dry. Am I getting that quote right, Artridge?
You are, Inspector.
Great. So, Mr. Lightfoot?
I don't remember.
You don't remember who was bleeding you dry, or you don't remember the conversation?
The conversation.
You told me it was going to blow my socks off.
Did I? Funny expression, that, innit? Blow your socks off?
How would that even work?
You know, in reality.
Oh, I don't know.
I guess the revelation is shocking enough that your hairs stand up on end with such force they shoot your socks from clean off your feet.
But what about your shoes?
Gentlemen, barked O'Ralby, not without reason.
Can we remain on track, please? Mr. Lightfoot,
Who was it who was bleeding you dry? Right, okay. Well, look, I was probably laying it on a bit thick, actually. She wasn't bleeding me dry, now I think about it. And besides, I'd got on this winner down the dog, so it was all sorted anyway. Best let bygones be bygones, right? Finally, the inspector could take no more and exploded. Mr. Lightfoot, if you continue in this vein, I'll charge you with the obstruction of justice.
All right, it was Daisy. But like I said, it was dealt with already.
Daisy? Daisy Love? I couldn't imagine the sweet creature I'd spoken to swaddled in a scarf doing anything that could remotely be described as bleeding them dry.
What was she doing?
She found out about my past. She knew I didn't have any actual training or nothing, and she said it wasn't fair that she'd worked so hard and had to overcome so much, and I just swanned right on in. Which was proper unfair for two reasons. First off, if anything, I had to work harder coming from where I came from. And secondly, she knew I'd never got to play the prince in Swan Lake because I hurt my Achilles last year, so using that word was out of order.
Are you saying Daisy Love was blackmailing you, Mr. Lightfoot?
Yeah, she was.
But it was over. I'd paid her off with my winnings. It was all done. I didn't have any reason to hurt her.
Because blackmailers are creatures of honour and never return for a second bite of the cherry.
Oh, bloody hell. Well, this is why I didn't want to tell you.
Because it makes you sound like a very attractive suspect for wanting to hurt her.
But I didn't want to hurt her.
Just scare her a little, perhaps. But you got your calculations wrong. She ended up getting hit.
What? I ain't never been up to the fly fort. I wouldn't know how to rig a sandbag to fall, and I was stood on stage at the time.
It could just as easily have been me what got hit if Barrington had told me to take centre and wait, just like he did Daisy.
The inspector and I exchanged a look. While Rudy's route into the ballet did provide a possible motive to remove Daisy, was it really worth killing over? And for that matter, he was hardly alone in having a reason to get rid of the poor girl. We wrapped the interview up without much else of note and ushered in our last interviewee of the morning, Eldridge Rawlins. The old boy came in and took his seat stiffly, sitting on the chair with his back ramrod straight as though he were a corporal being admonished by a superior officer.
Thank you for speaking with us, Mr. Rawlins.
Not a bit of it. One of our own has been hurt.
Killed?
Quite. Got to rally round at times like these. No doubt you'll be wanting this. Should have acted sooner. Was hoping it was all just emotional bluster. You know what artistes are like.
He handed over a piece of folded paper. O'Ralby unfolded it and scanned the contents before looking up at Rawlins.
You really should have brought this to my attention yesterday, sir. Or before, even.
I'm sure you're right. I've no defence beyond the sentimentality of an old fool.
Eventually, the inspector handed me the note, which was from Marlena to Rawlins, and read,
Mr. Rawlins, I am truly sorry for my silly joke. In my defence, I did not think you would ever hear it to be offended. I cannot believe that not only did Daisy betray my confidence by telling you what I said, but that you are now rewarding her with my role. If ever I have the opportunity to repay this kindness to her, I will do so, and you will have to bear some of the blame. I still hope there is some time to work this out. Marlena Schweinbolger.
Well, that's definitely Marlena's signature. I've seen it. Which doesn't so much put the cat amongst the pigeons as serve the frisky feline a lovely little roast bird on a bed of smashed veg with a red wine reduction, does it?
It is an intriguing lead, Mr. Artridge. It is an intriguing lead.
Thank you, Mr. Rawlins, for belatedly bringing this to our attention.
Shall we discuss it over lunch with the Duke, Mr. Artridge? Mr. Rawlins is getting the bill.
Am I? Oh, I see. Quite right.
Crime Screws and Christmas is a New Old Friends production, part of the Comedy Whodunits For Your Ears podcast series, written and performed by Fergus Woods-Donoff and Heather Westwell, with sound and music by Fred Riding. New Old Friends gratefully acknowledge the support of Arts Council England in making Comedy Whodunits For Your Ears.